Okay, Brishus, my father. Let's begin with an interesting pasuk in Tehillim. David HaMelech said, "Me oivai techakmeni mitzvosecha, ki le'olam hili." So the pasuk pshat, very often when you're trying to learn how to read Hebrew, it sometimes helps to translate the words out of order. Meaning in English, we would have said this pasuk, mitzvosecha me oivai techakmeni. So sometimes if you're trying to just figure out how to read the pasuk, it's helpful to know that technique. Me oivai techakmeni, from my enemies, I have become wise, mitzvosecha, through the mitzvos. Right? Meaning, the mitzvos have made me wiser than my enemies. Ki li'olam hili, because the mitzvos are forever for me. But I want to use as a springboard to tonight's topic, which we'll see how it connects to the Parsha, a comment that the Kedushas Levi has in Parshas Noach, as well as in Parshas Shlach. The Rapshitzer, the Zarakodesh of Rapshitz in Parshas Vayera says the same thing. And that is a different understanding of this pasuk, B'derech Chasidus. Me oivai tichakmeni mitzvosecha. Again, the pasuk pshat is, through the mitzvos, hopefully, through my commitment to mitzvos, I've become stronger than my enemies. But the Berditchever, the Kedusha Slavi, understood the pasuk as follows. Me oivai, from my enemies, tichakmeni mitzvosecha. I can learn how to be smart about mitzvos. If I pay attention to sometimes the negative behavior of the Rasham of the world, or if I pay attention to people who are not even charged with the mitzvos and how they take a certain idea seriously, tichakmeni mitzvosecha, I can learn about a mitzvah. The way the Kedushas Levi explains in source number 2, me oivai ratzolomar mem shel me oivai hu kamo min oivai. From my enemies. From my enemies, me oyev sheli, dahainu yetzer hara, tichakmeni mitzvosecha. Pay attention to how your yetzer hara behaves, and then you can learn how to be a better Jew. Let's see what that means. Ratzolomar. Hayetzahara mafato si lataivos gashmi. The Yetzahara says, I want you to have a good time. So you say, Yetzahara, I'm committed to having a good time. I'd also like to have a good time. The Hainu taivas isho, shar taivas gashmi. The Yetzahara is trying to lure a person in to focusing on one's physicality. Azai mizeh taiva gashmi, me Yetzahara tichakmeni mitzvosecha. But hopefully, I can say to the Yetzahara, hold on a second. You want me to have an enjoyable life. That's what you're claiming. You're trying to say, do X, Y, or Z, cheat on your business, take advantage of this forbidden pleasure. You'll enjoy life more that way. So say to the Yetzirah, if you're so committed to me enjoying life, azai libi boer lios oved es Hashem. So I'm going to use your guiding principle, have a good time to serve Hashem. Ki la'olam hi li. What does that mean, the end of the pasuk? Ki la'olam hi li. Ratzalomar, taivas gashmi hu davar nifsar v'chala. You're offering me something that lasts a couple of moments, or a couple of minutes, or a couple of hours, or a couple of years, or even an entire lifetime, but compared to the eternity of my soul, that's nothing. So you want me to have a good time, but you're committed to having a good time for a couple of seconds. So I say to the Yetzara, let's have a good time, but let's have a good time forever. And the way to have a good time forever is lo king kishe'eya oved habore. When I choose HaKadosh Baruch Hu, zehu li la'olam. Kani medabik asmi b'bore shuchai v'kayim lo. Alright, you want me to have fun? I want to have fun. You want me to enjoy myself? I want to enjoy myself. But says the end of the pasuk, tichachmeni mitzvosecha. Why can't we enjoy ourselves with mitzvos? Ki la'olam hili. That's a pleasure that lasts forever. And again, is not a fleeting moment in this world. So I want to learn from several examples, starting with this week's parsha, we'll see several other examples of how, if we pay attention to the commitment and the resolve and the mesiras nefesh, if you will, of our enemies, then we have to challenge ourselves: how can I not do the same? How can I not be at least as dedicated to the principles that my enemy lives by? And what's the example that we find in this week's parsha? It's the moment that Yosef comes to bury his father Yaakov. Yaakov made Yosef swear not to bury me in Mitzrayim, take me to the Kivrei Avos, I want to be buried in Mar Samach Pela. And when Yosef has to inform Paro of this, he tells him in source number 3, he comes to Beis Paro and he says, please, If you find me favorable in your eyes, Yosef says, please, I want you to convey the following message to Paro. Pasuk Hey, the second line in source number 3, Avi hishbiani leim, where my father made me swear, Hine anochi meis, I'm going to die. B'kivri asher kirisi li be'eretz Kanaan, shama tikmareini. In the kever, asher kirisi li be'eretz Kanaan, we'll explain what the word kirisi means in a moment, that's where I want to be buried. And therefore, Yosef is asking permission to go up to Eretz Kanaan to bury his father. What does it mean, asher kirisi li? Rashi has 3 pshatim. Rashi says, kirisi might be a lashon of digging. I want to be buried in the burial plot which I dug. I didn't know that Yaakov dug his own burial plot in Maris Machpelah, but okay, could be. Rashi quotes a second opinion. Maybe kirisi is a word which also means kanisi. I want to be buried in the burial plot which I have acquired. Okay. And Rashi explains, based on Rabbi Akiva, who once traveled, and he heard that the word kirisi is a lashon of mechira, of buying and selling. Okay. But then Rashi says his third pshat. And this is the one that I want to analyze tonight. Va'od midrasho, says Rashi in source number 4, where it's bolded, lashon kiri. Asher kirisi means a kri. What's a kri? A pile. I want to be buried in what? In the kever that I piled. Says Rashi, digur. Digur means a pile. Shenatol Yaakov kol kesev izav shehevi mibes lavan. How did Yaakov acquire Maris HaMachpelah? Esav was entitled to it just as much as he was, so he decided to buy Esav out. And how did he buy Esav out? When he came to Esav, back in Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov took all of his money, silver, gold, he took everything, and he put it into a massive pile, into a kri, into a pile. Va'omer le'Esav, and he said to Esav, tol zeh bishvil chalkecha b'mara. Take as much money as you want, as long as I can buy out your portion of Maris HaMachpelah. Take whatever you want. Whatever you think is a fair price, take as much as you want. You want the whole pile? Take the whole pile. So let's ask a simple question on Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, you know, Jews are usually pretty smart, right? We have a little bit of a business sense. So maybe some negotiations. You know, start with a low offer, see if Esav bites, you know? Right? Well, you put all his money, he gave over all of his money in a huge pile, everything that he had amassed in all those years in Beis Lavan, he puts all his silver and gold into a big pile and says, Esav, help yourself, take as much as you want. This is the same Yaakov who in Parshas Vayishlach, according to Rashi, went back for the Pachim Ketanim. He couldn't abandon, again, like I said a couple weeks ago, a 5-cent refund on this soda bottle. But all his money he's prepared to just like throw at Esav? Where's the negotiations? Where's the business sense? Why did Yaakov give over all of his money for Maris HaMachpelah? Negotiate a little bit. What was Yaakov trying? What kind of statement was Yaakov trying to make? So our friend once offered the following explanation. It's a beautiful explanation. When Yaakov meets Esav for that first time in that encounter, the pasuk says that Yaakov is scared. What's he scared of? That Esav is tough? That Esav's coming with his 400 men? What's he scared of? Vayira Yaakov ma'od vayetzer lo. What's Yaakov so afraid of? Says the Medrash in source number 5, Yaakov is afraid that Esav has 2 merits that he feels that he doesn't have. Of course, Yaakov has many other merits that Esav doesn't have. But Yaakov is afraid of a certain holiness that he feels that Esav has acquired in all of those years that Yaakov was away from his father's home. Omar, Yaakov was afraid, and he said, Kol Hashanim Halalu, where it's bolded in source number 5, all of these years, Yoshev Be'eretz Yisrael, Tomer Shu Ba'ilai Mikoch Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael. I'm scared, I'm going to fight against Esav. Esav has a big schus. You know what schus Esav has that I haven't had in quite some time? The mitzvah of Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael. And then Yaakov says, not only that, for all of these years, Esav has had the schus of what? Of being in his father's home, and he has the schus of Kibbutz Av. So Yaakov is scared, says the Medrash. He's scared of Esav's schus of Yishev Eretz Yisrael, and he's scared of Esav's schus of Kibbutz Av. So explained Rabbi Frand, in his first volume, Rabbi Frand on the Parsha, it's up to, I think, the 3rd volume now, in the original volume that he published, he had a beautiful explanation. He said, you know what Yaakov was saying by putting that big pile of money down? Yaakov said, Esav, I'm prepared to compete. I'm going to be willing to keep up with you. You have the schus of Eretz Yisrael. You have the schus of Kibbutz Av. But I want to show you that I'm prepared to give away every penny that I have, All the money that I've amassed, all of my success in Olam Hazeh, I'm prepared to give it all up for what? For Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and for Kibbutz Av. What do I ask? All I want is that my eternal resting spot should be where? My inheritance should be where? Maaret HaMachpelah. I want my portion in Eretz Yisrael. And not only that, I want to be buried where? Alongside my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents. That's where I want to be. That's where I want to be a part of. So this was Yaakov's way of saying to Esav, right, take as much money as you want. I want to show you, you're not more serious about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael than I am. And there's no way, yes, you were in a position for the last number of years. You were Zocha for the last number of years to have the opportunity to serve Father in a way that I couldn't, to be in Eretz Yisrael in a way that I couldn't. But don't for a second fool yourself, Esav, to think you're more dedicated to the mitzvah than I am. Maaret HaMachpelah, I'll give everything for Maaret HaMachpelah. To be with my parents, I'll give everything for the schus of being in such a place. So Yaakov teaches us, Me'oivai techakmeni mitzvosecha. Look at Esav's schusim. Look at the merit that Esav has accrued through these mitzvos. And ask yourself, am I at least as committed as Esav? Is my love of Eretz Yisrael at least as strong as Esav? Is my respect for my parents the same that Esav had for his parents, the way that Esav displayed that respect? And again, that's a challenge we have to ask ourselves time and time again. It reminds me of the story of the Chafetz Chaim. They tell a story, the Chafetz Chaim one morning was overheard debating his Yetzirah. A conversation between the Chafetz Chaim and his Yetzirah. The Yetzirah said to the Chafetz Chaim, go back to sleep. You've gotten up so many times for God. You made it to shul on time so many times. You're an old person now. No one will call you out on it. If the Chafetz Chaim didn't come to shul one morning, we'd say, he's sick, you know, sleep in, take it easy. And it was overheard, the Chafetz Chaim conversing with, that's how the story goes, conversing with his Yetzirah, the family members heard the Chafetz Chaim say, Yetzirah, you're much older than me. You've been around a lot longer. And you got up early this morning to do your job, so why shouldn't I get up early in the morning to do my job? Am I not at least as serious about my avoda as you are about your avoda? Such an important lesson for us to think about. What are we prepared to spend on? What's Esav prepared to spend on? How committed is Esav to something? You know, I think about it also this time of the year. People are already thinking about their winter breaks, their vacations. You know, what do we spend a lot of money on comfortably without complaining? And what do we complain about being too expensive as Jews? This costs too much or that costs too much. Right? What do we convince ourselves that we're good at in terms of pursuing the things that we're interested in? And where do we tell ourselves, nah, it's always right, this is too hard, this is not for me, this I'm not capable of doing. It's a beautiful medrash. The medrash tells a story about an encounter between Eliyahu HaNavi and a Pashut Yid who was a fisherman. Eliyahu HaNavi encounters this Jew who is a fisherman, and he says to him, tell me, do you learn Torah? Me learn Torah? I don't know how to learn Torah. What do I know about learning Torah? So Eliyahu says, why don't you learn Torah? I don't know how to learn Torah. What do you want from me? Expect me to sit and learn Torah? That's not the type of guy I am. So he says, what do you do? He says, I'm a simple fisherman. So he says, tell me, how do you catch the fish? You catch them with your hands? So now, as a very proud fisherman, he says, no, let me tell you. He says, I make these magnificent traps, these nets, all these contraptions. So he says to him, so Eliyahu says to him, so if you're able to figure out how to catch fish, so how can you tell me you're not able to learn Torah? So the Kotzker Rebbe asked a simple question. Again, a simple question. Imagine someone comes to someone and says, I want you to paint a replica of the Mona Lisa. Guy says, I don't know how to paint. So he says, so tell me, what are you good at? I'm good at playing basketball. Oh, so if you're good at playing basketball, why can't you paint? What does one have to do with the other? You're good at catching fish, so therefore you're good at learning Gemara, Rashi, and Tosos. Meaning, what was the taina? What was he saying to him? Eliyahu says, oh, if you can catch fish, how can you tell me you don't know how to learn Gemara? Maybe it's a different skill set. Maybe it's a different part of the brain. What was he saying to him? Rav Nassim Gestetner, who I was zochet to meet one time, was a gadol in Eretz Yisrael, went to his home once in Bnei Brak. In his volume called Sichos Malav HaMalkin, source number 6, he explains as follows. He says, why was this fellow so successful in catching fish? Why is a person sometimes so good at making a dollar, of being creative in their business pursuits? You know why? Because they understand that I need to make money. Why do I need to make money? Because if I don't have money, I don't have clothing, I don't have food, I can't pay my rent, and I've got some serious problems. So my life depends upon it. So Eliyahu HaNavi was saying to this fellow, you know what your problem with Torah is? You think Torah is extra credit. You think, if I have time, if I'm that type of guy, so I'll learn how to learn. The problem is, you don't understand. The same way you taught yourself to fish, because your life depends upon it, your soul needs Torah. And as soon as you realize that it's equal, it's equally important, if not more important, then guess what? You'll find a way to learn. You'll stop convincing yourself that you don't know how to learn. That's how the Kotzker Rebbe explained this medrash, this Tana de Be'eliyahu, this conversation between Eliyahu and the fisherman. As soon as you understand that it's as important to your life as, again, making that parnasa, so you'll find the way. You'll find the way to be successful. We psych ourselves out sometimes. We convince ourselves, this is for me and this is not for me. But ask yourself, if I'm able to do it in this arena of life, why can't I do it in that arena of life? Or if so-and-so is willing to do it, if Esav can do it, so why can't I do it? If the Yetzirah can do it, why can't I do it? I think we mentioned a couple weeks ago the Gemara in Maseches Yoma that says that when a person comes to the Olam HaEmes, there are three people who are going to get us in trouble. Who are the three people who are going to get us in trouble? Hillel, Rabbi Lazar ben Charsom, and Yosef HaTzadik. Gemara in Yoma and Daf Lamed Hay. Person comes to Olam HaEmes and says, I'm too poor, I wasn't able to learn Torah. So Hashem's going to say, were you more poor than Hillel? Hillel's literally frozen on the rooftop, trying to survive, to listen to Torah, giving away his mamish, the couple pennies that he earned. Were you more poor than Hillel? Hillel became successful in Torah despite being impoverished. Why couldn't you? A person says, I'm too wealthy. I'm not able to learn Torah. Right? I'm so busy with managing my hedge fund. I simply didn't have the time. Too much money under my watch. I couldn't. So we say, were you more wealthy than Rabbi Elazar ben Charsom, who was exceedingly wealthy, very successful businessman, and yet he was Rabbi Elazar ben Charsom in the Gemara? And if a person says, it was my good looks that got me into trouble, it was too attractive, it was hard for me to pull myself away from the taivus of Olam Hazeh, we say, were you more beautiful than Yosef HaTzadik? He became a tzadik, despite the fact that he was sought after by not only Eishes Potiphar, but many women in Mitzrayim. So these three people are going to come to testify against the person on the Yom HaDin. Svarim bring a remez, l'davar. Rabos machshavos b'lev ish. A person's going to have all sorts of excuses, machshavos. All sorts of explanations why I couldn't this, why I couldn't that. I couldn't make it to Minyan. I couldn't learn. I couldn't daven. I couldn't change this midah. I couldn't conquer this Yetzahara. Rabos machshavos b'lev ish. Va'atzas Hashem. You know what Hashem's response is going to be? Hi takum. The Svarim say a remez. He, Hey Yud Aleph, is Rashi Tevos, Hillel, Yosef, and Elazar. These three tzaddikim are going to come to say, Hashem's going to call them out, come stand up, you stand up and testify against this guy because he's making excuses. So I want to introduce you to someone who's going to get us all into trouble. I think if the Gemara was being written today, if we were rewriting the Gemara in Maseches Yoma today, Daf Lamed Hey, we'd have to add the following person to the list. There's a fellow by the name of Jeff Wild. Anyone ever hear of Jeff Wild? Jeff Wild published an article in the YU Commentator more than 10 years ago. I don't remember exactly. I tried to find it online. The article is no longer online. But you can check out Jeff Wild's blog. Okay? Jeff Wild lives in Switzerland. Jeff Wild was raised Catholic. Jeff Wild has a master's in Catholic spirituality from Santa Clara University in California. Jeff Wild's ex-wife is Jewish. But as you can see from his credentials, Jeff Wild is by no means one of our people. And Jeff Wild, a number of years ago, again, it's more than 10 years at this point, I don't know exactly how long ago, Jeff Wild stumbled upon a website called yutorah.org. Jeff Wild, a Catholic fellow from Switzerland, stumbled upon a website called yutorah.org. And he was curious. He was clearly a spiritual thinker. He has, a master's in Catholic spirituality. So he started listening to Shiurim. And he discovered Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig, who he found to be very brilliant, which he is. And he started listening to his Talmud lectures. And Jeff Wild wrote an article in the YU Commentator describing his love of learning Torah and how he fell wildly in love with Torah. And he listens to Shiurim on YU Torah all day. He wrote in that article, if I remember correctly, he said, I listened to Rabbi Rosenzweig's Shiur on Chulin, although he noted in the article that he prefers Maseches Bava Kamma. Jeff Wild from Switzerland. So how are we able to say to ourselves, Torah is too... This guy is not even a Jew. He sits online listening. He sits in Switzerland listening to Shurim, right? And he's plowing through Ari Rosenzweig's, Gemara Shurim, right? So what excuse do we have? We can't do it. We can't download a shiur on our ride to work in the morning. It's too hard for us to do. We can't figure out the technology. What's our excuse? We can't figure out how to get it on our phone. We can't get the app, the Why You Torah app to work. I heard it wasn't working. Right? But these people in the world who we have to answer to. If Esav has Kibud Av V'Em, if Esav's willing to have mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, so Yaakov says, I have to put all my money down on Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. I have to put all my money down on Kibud Av V'Em. I have to go all in. If I'm able to fish because my life depends on it, so then I have to be able to learn Torah because my life depends on it. If Jeff Wild can learn, if Hillel can learn when he's poor, if Elazar ben Charsim can learn when he's rich, if Yosef can learn even though he's a handsome, very attractive person, so how could we not do the same? One of the most awesome, underrated Jews, I would say today, because God forbid no one, right? But someone whose writings are just so, so good, and I wish people read them more, Reb Irving Bunim. Reb Irving Bunim, I'm sure people have sitting dusty on a shelf somewhere in their house, the Ethics from Sinai, the 3-volume collection on Pirkei Avos that he penned a number of years ago. Reb Irving Bunim was a tremendous lay leader, an American lay leader, a right-hand man of Rav Aaron Cutler for many years. Passed away in 1980. From the 1930s to the 1980s, he was disseminating Torah in a very unique way. He was a person who spoke at a lot of conventions. He was a person who knew how to, he had a way with words, both in terms of his oral presentation and the way that he wrote. So in addition to his very famous 3 volumes on Pirkei Avos called Ethics from Sinai, he also has a beautiful volume of essays called Ever Since Sinai. And in that volume, he notices the following thing in Bamidbar. In Perek Gimel and in Perek Ches. What happened to the firstborns? I'm a firstborn. Father's a firstborn. Right, for the firstborns in the room, we have to feel bad for ourselves because, unfortunately, we were supposed to work in the Beis HaMikdash. And we lost that opportunity by Chere Egel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to replace all of the firstborns with the Levi and with Sheva Levi. As the Torah describes in source number 7, Hashem says, from this point forward, I'm taking the Levium in place of the firstborns. The firstborns were indebted to Hashem for Makas Bechoros. But once Cheira Egel took place, and only Sheva Levi proved its righteousness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to replace all of those firstborns with Levium. As the Medrash Tanchuma describes in source number 8, Shivto Shal Levi Kulam Tzadikim Hayu, Vayuosin as a Torah, they were the ones who established the Torah and protected the Torah. V'lo od, says the Medrash, where it's bolded, Misha Asu as ha'egel, lo nishtatvu sham shivto shalevi. Sheva Levi showed their good conscience and their ability to not succumb to the temptation of the egel. And therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu decided to replace every firstborn with a Levi. Here's the problem. If you look in Bamidbar, Perek Gimel, the Torah tells you very clearly what the problem was. How many firstborns were there? And how many Levium were there? Right? Every Levi is going to replace one firstborn. There were 273 more firstborn children, than there were Levium. So the Torah describes in source number 9, what are we going to do about this problem? Bamidbar Perek Gimel, Ve'yadaber Hashem al Moshe le'emor, Kach es ha-Levium tachas kol b'chor b'vnei Yisrael, Ves behemas halavim tachas behemtam vahayuli halavim ani Hashem ves piduye hashlosha vahashivim vamasayim the 273 haotfim al halavim the 273 additional firstborns mi bechor bnei Yisrael the 273 additional firstborns that there were more than levim what are you going to do with them how are you going to be poda them. How are you going to redeem a firstborn from his sanctity to make him just a regular member of society once again? Five shekel ahead. Asked Rabbi Irving Bunim in an essay in his volume Ever Since Sinai, I don't understand. 5 shekel? These are not babies. Why do we redeem a baby? At my opinion, a ben, the Kohen got 5 shekel. Says Irving Bunim, you know why? Because I was a baby. Because I was 30 days old. If you look in Parshas Bechukosai, when the Torah sets up the scale, the pay scale for Erechin, for the value of a Jew, if I say I'm giving the Erech of so-and-so to the Beis HaMikdash, you pay based on whether they're male or female and their age bracket. The Torah has a whole system in Parshas Bechukosai. So why are we paying 5 shekel for these 273 firstborns? They're not babies. Why is the redemption price set at 5 shekel? So if you look in Rashi, Rashi says something which seems to be totally unusual, almost irrelevant. Rashi says, oh, I'll tell you why 5 shekel. A firstborn is 5 shekel. Here's why. Says Rashi in source number 10, Kach haisa michiraso shel Yosef esrim kesef. Because Yosef was sold for 5 shekel, which the Torah identifies as esrim kesef, shahaya b'chora shel Rachel. Yosef was a firstborn, and Yosef was sold to the Ishmaelim for 5 shekel. So therefore, if you have to redeem a firstborn, it should be 5 shekel. Even if it's an adult firstborn, it should be the same price that Yosef was sold to the Ishmaelim for. So ask Rav Irving Bunim, well, what does one have to do with the other? Again, same way the guy who can paint the Mona, play basketball can't paint the Mona Lisa. Right? What does the 5 shekel of the sale of Yosef have anything to do? Okay, Yosef happens to be the Bechor of Rachel. So what? So Rav Irving Bunim hits such an honest and raw nerve, I think, with many of us. Because sometimes we complain about high tuition, and we complain about paying membership to the shul, and we complain about spending on this or that, and how expensive it is to buy shmura matzah, and it is expensive. But says Irving Bunim the following, I want to read it in his own words, because it's very powerful. In an essay called Setting the Price, again from the volume Ever Since Sinai, 1977, stop and consider, who were those firstborn Israelites? They were the original servants of the Lord, intended from the start to serve as his ministers at the Mishkan. They were to be his holy servants, offering up his sacrifices. When you come to redeem a servant of Hashem, the Lord just sounds a little funny. I can only say the Lord so many times. When you come to redeem a servant of Hashem, says the Torah, do not sell him short. Let him not be worth less to you than what the Midianites or Yishmaelim, traders who bought Yosef, were willing to pay for a little servant boy. Are you willing to pay as much as Yishmael was willing to pay for Yosef? Of course, you should be prepared to pay a lot more. But the Torah is saying, are you prepared? Do you value, do you put the price tag on a Jew at least as much as someone is willing to, an enemy of a Jew is willing to pay for a Jew? Is a Jew worth at least that much to you? Pay for a servant of mine, says the Almighty, at least what those heathen paid for a Hebrew boy, not less. And then Irving Bunim makes the following calculation. He says, the American government, again, this book was written in 1977, the American government is willing to pay approximately $9,600 to put you through elementary school. Another $6,000, halavai, $1,500 a year, to put you through high school, and about $15,000 to put you through college. Says Irving Bunim, so when a good Jewish boy went through the public school system, elementary school, high school, and college, the city, state, and or federal government were willing to pay some $31,000 to make him, hopefully, a good, intelligent young man. A good, intelligent American citizen. America's willing to pay $31,000 for your neshama. Right? For your life, for your soul, for your existence. To give you what they consider to be a proper education. And it is a proper education. Today, the cost is certainly much higher. Then how much is it worth to us to develop a Jewish boy into a good, intelligent, young Torah scholar? How much more should we be willing to pay to make sure that our children get a Jewish education? Is it really expensive? Yes, it's really expensive. Can we maybe do a better job looking at how we spend in our schools? Maybe. Maybe we should. Right? But the thought that, again, that the American government, so to speak, I mean, it happens to be our tax dollars just going back to ourselves. But okay, if you look at it in that more altruistic way, right, that the world is willing to pay to make you into just a decent human being, hopefully that's your experience in American public school. Right? So how much more should we be willing to pay to give our children the opportunity to what? To attend a private Torah institution, a yeshiva. It's worth it. How could it not be worth it? He says that he once read, he goes on and he writes in this essay, it's not on the page in front of you, he said he once read about a conference of missionaries that took place in Oakland, California, and they were discussing at that conference how much they would be willing to pay to catch a Jew. To take a Jew and to proselytize him and to convert him to their faith, the true faith, in quotes. And they came to the conclusion the church would be willing to spend about $50,000 to get a Jew. So he says that he told this to Rav Aaron Cutler. Again, I told you Irving Bunim was very close to Rav Aaron Cutler. And Rav Aaron Cutler, when he heard $50,000 to convert a Jew, he said, "Oi, a Jewish neshama." Irving Bunim says on another occasion he met Ben Gurion. And he told him the same thing. He said, you know, There are people who are willing to pay $50,000 to convert a Jew to what they consider to be the true faith. And Ben-Gurion said, wow, $50,000? And he said, he noticed the difference. It was so clear to him. Rav Aaron said, oh, you Jewish neshama? It doesn't matter what number you're going to say. Nope. Right? We have to be prepared to pay $100,000, $1 million. And Ben-Gurion was impressed. He said, wow, And I don't know if we can keep up with that. That's a lot of money, $50,000. And Rav Irving Buderim said, we have to ask ourselves, what's our price tag? What's our price tag on mitzvahs? What's our price tag on our values? I want to share with you a very scary comment from the Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer, the author of the Hafla. The Chassam Sofer in his drashos, he's commenting on the Psukim in Megillas Rus. When Boaz says to Rus, you know, Hashem should really repay you and should pay you many times over for your kindness that you gave up. Rus, you gave up a life of royalty to come tachas kanfei Ashchina. The Chassam Sofer quotes his Rebbe. And again, first we'll present the more negative side of the picture, and then I'll give you a much more positive way to look at the same idea, who explained the following. If you take a look in source 13, where it's bolded in the right-hand column, about four lines down, he says, I want to share with you what I heard from Memvav. Memvav is Mori V'Rabi. Hagon Achosid Baal Hafla Hashem Yishmereu V'Yechayei. Who explained the Lashon of Al Menas L'Kabel Pras, right? It says in Pirkei Avos, don't do mitzvos al menas l'kabel pras. Don't do a mitzvah for a prize. Don't do a mitzvah for a simple reward. Listen to what the Hafla said. It's a little bit frightening. The Hafla explained, the Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer explained, D'inei kol chafatzim lo yeshu b'schar mitzvachas. The reward of a mitzvah, Chazal tell us, we cannot put a price tag on it. We need to be prepared for a Jewish soul. Like Rav Aaron Cutler said, oh, you Jewish soul? Whatever the missionaries pay, we have to pay more. Like Yaakov Avinu said to Esau, whatever Maris Machpelah is worth to you, I have to prove to you that it's worth more to me. I have to prove to you that Kibbut Ava'im, as much as that's your mitzvah, Esau, it's worth more to me. I'll give up everything. I'll give up all my possessions to be able to prove to you that it means more to me than it does to you. So we don't know, Chazal tell us, and the Psukim tell us, in the Vim and Ksuvim, we don't know the price tag of a mitzvah. Mitzvah is an infinite value. But sometimes we set the price. What does that mean? Says the Hafla in the last line of the right column, source 13. Ayin dalid mem, al derech mashal, by example. Haragil b'mitzvah. Imagine you always do this mitzvah. Imagine you always come to this, Thursday night cheer. Imagine you always come to this Thursday night cheer. Okay? And 1 week, right? And you're consistent the whole year. You know, it's going to go on your scorecard. Tough shin, ayin, tes. Every week, Thursday night. Except for the weeks that I missed. I apologize. Okay, but every week you are here. It's on your scorecard. 45 minutes of Torah. 8:15 to 9 o'clock. Gvaldik. You have no idea what that's worth. Imagine 1 week, someone calls you up. Yeah? And says, I got great tickets to a ball game. Do you want to come? Thursday night. Game starts 7:30. Yeah, I don't know. I usually learn then. Right? That's one of the. It's, you know, I don't usually miss. And you decide to trade in the shiur for now. Again, that's your cheshbon. But says the Hafla, just understand what you're doing. You just set the price. You just set a value on your Torah. Meaning your Torah was prior to that point. Your Torah was of infinite value. Whatever Hashem thinks Torah is worth, which is a lot. I don't know what that is. I don't know how to describe it. All I know is what it says in Pirkei Avos, that all the pleasures of Olam Hazeh can't compare to one mitzvah. We don't really know what that means. It sounds very lofty. Right? But you just put the price of 45 minutes of Torah, the equivalent of pleasure of courtside tickets for, for a Knicks game. So now Hashem says, okay, so now I'm going to give you that amount of reward for all the shiurim that you went through from Tav Shanai and Tess, because you set the price. You told me what it's worth to you. You showed me what you were willing to trade it for. So says the Hafla, look again. Haragil b'mitzvah, a person accustoms himself to do this mitzvah. One time, manicha melasos mipnei hefsid mamon ma. He decides, you know what, I can't catch that mincha minyan today because I'm on this phone call and it's worth too much money to me. Okay, so you just put a price on mincha. Just understand that it may be maybe $1 million deal. But I'm telling you, says the Hafla, mincha is worth more than $1 million. Hinei gila daito shalo olsa shav yaha mitzvah be'einav, el lebekach v'kach v'lo yoser. So you just said this mitzvah is worth this amount and not more. She lulei kein, because if not, if the mitzvah was worth more, if you really believe the mitzvah was worth more, so then what? Then you wouldn't have traded the mitzvah for this other thing. So says the Hafla, the Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer, realize when the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, don't do mitzvahs al menas lekabel pras. Pras means a portion. Don't do the mitzvahs for a portion of their price. If you let HaKadosh Baruch Hu set the price, it's going to be worth a lot more. If you start trading mitzvahs for the pleasures of this world, so then that's going to become the going rate for your mitzvahs. And God forbid, you're going to be disappointed when someone else is able to cash in at the end of a lifetime of Torah and mitzvahs for much greater value than that, again, that cheapening of the mitzvahs that took place through your own evaluation. That's sort of the negative way to look at it. I'm going to give you a much more positive way to look at it that's really, it could really give you such a simchas achayim. There's an amazing letter from the Imre Emes. The Imre Emes, of course, was the Ger Rebbe, the son of the Svas Emes, the third Rebbe of Ger. And in the Michtavei Torah, in Source 14, the Imre Emes says, I like to explain to people the concept, also a mission in Pirkei Avos. He writes at the end of the first line, Ani ragil lefare, Source 14, v'havi mechashiv hefsid mitzvah. Think about loss of a mitzvah, keneged schara. This is going to be an amazing way to get so much more pleasure out of your davening, out of your Shabbos, out of tefillin in the morning. Says the Imre Emes the following. Lasos cheshbon nafsho. Make the following calculation. Each person, according to your madrega. Im yitnu lecha million ruble. If someone came, I'm going to give you the example that he gives, but then we'll expand it outward. He uses the example of tefillin. Okay? I'm going to speak for myself. I am confident. Now you're going to say, well, you were never in that situation, you know, don't be such a big shot. I'm confident if someone came to me this morning and said, $1,000, $1,000 check for you to skip a day of tefillin, I would say, I can't do it. I'm confident, $10,000, I'm confident, you might think I'm a liar, I'm confident I'd be able to say, I can't give up a day of tefillin for $10,000, right? What if someone said $1,000,000, I'll write you $1,000,000 check if you take one day off of wearing tefillin, okay? It's an isayon. I'd like to imagine I could still say I can't do it. I can't give up tefillin. Okay, I'm more confident. Let's say in the realm of Shabbos, someone says flip that light switch on Shabbos. I'll give you $1,000,000 if you flip that switch. I promise you, I could not flip that light switch for $1,000,000. I couldn't do it for $10,000,000. So says the Imre Emes, make the following calculation. Look what he writes. If someone offered you $1,000,000 ruble, v'shar machmadim. Here's a good time to chazer halacha. When you put on your tefillin, for the men in the room, when you put on your tefillin in the morning, the Chafetz Chaim reminds us in the Mishnah Brura, the bracha is lehoniach, not lehaniach. And here's a good example. Right? Taniach as opposed to honiach. Right? Lehaniach would mean to not put on tefillin. Lehoniach means to place the tefillin on my arm. Okay? So if someone were to pay you not to wear tefillin, so he writes to this person, whoever the Imre Emes was writing to, betach, with certainty, al tachpot, you wouldn't accept. For $1,000,000 ruble, you wouldn't give up your tefillin. So says the Imre Emes, so therefore, make the following calculation. Vehine tisha'er benafshecha. So assess on your own. Kama yelecha simcha, v'imhayelecha $1,000,000 ruble. So now just imagine a guy stopped you on the street one day and said, here you go, a check, $1,000,000 ruble, $1,000,000. How happy would you be if someone gave you $1,000,000? How big would your smile be? How happy would you come home that day to share the good news with your family? Someone stopped me in the street and gave me $1,000,000. How overjoyed would you be? So you yourself wouldn't trade your tefillin for $1,000,000. So why don't you feel $1,000,000 worth of simcha when you put your tefillin on in the morning? You yourself wouldn't violate Shabbos for $1,000,000. So why don't you feel the simcha as if you just got $1,000,000 check? Every time a Kodesh Baruch Hu gives you Shabbos. Make your own calculation. Make the calculation against yourself. B'zeh ha-simcha v'od yoser. Mizeh. Titztarech lismalos b'simcha banachas tefillin. So why are you standing there like half asleep putting on your tefillin in the morning? You yourself wouldn't trade the tefillin for $1,000,000. So shouldn't you have $1,000,000 worth of simcha when you put the tefillin on? Shouldn't you have $1,000,000 worth of simcha when you keep Shabbos? Why do you feel burdened by Shabbos? You yourself wouldn't trade Shabbos for $1,000,000. You wouldn't violate Shabbos for $1,000,000. So why don't you feel $1 million worth of simcha? That's what it means for a Jew, again, to make the cheshbon not only against the Esavs of the world, or not only against the Yetzirahs of the world, right? Not only against the Jeff Wilds of Switzerland's of the world, but to make the cheshbon against yourself. Ask yourself, what's my going price? Not what would Yishmael pay for Yosef, like Irving Bunim said, right? But what's it worth to me? Sometimes a person can even take a tragic moment in their life and use it to tap into a deep part of themselves that they didn't even know existed. And I'll give you a very simple example. I'm sure everyone remembers in 2009, January 15, 2009, the miracle on the Hudson. Yeah, when Captain Sully was able to land that airplane and save many, many lives. He took off from LaGuardia Airport, he hit a flock of birds, all his engines shut down, and with unbelievable skill he couldn't make it to anywhere. Teeter Bar, he couldn't make it anywhere. The only place he was able to land the highway was either on the west side, to land the airplane was on the west side highway, which would probably kill everyone on the plane and many people on the ground, or to try to land the plane where? On the Hudson. Now to land a plane on water, if you don't hit that just right, if one wing touches down before the other, game over. You have to get it just right. And he did. And every single person on that plane made it off alive. And he was a big hero. He's a very humble person, unassuming person. Well, eventually he wrote some books about his experience. And he once shared in an interview, how did you do it? How did you stay so focused? Where'd you draw that strength from? I mean, it took tremendous skill, and he was a highly skilled, captain of a plane for many, many years. But how did you do it? So you know what he said? He spoke about his own tragedy. He spoke about his own father's death. His father, unfortunately, was very depressed and took his life. He killed himself. Suicide. He killed himself. And he said, the pain of losing my father before his time, right, in a way where it could have been prevented. He could have gotten the professional help that he needed. Right? And the pain that I went through, losing my father in that tragic way, all I had to do to land that plane was think about the pain that all of the family members of all those people on the plane were going to go through. And I knew my own pain. And I was able to what? Have a mechafshed hefsed mitzvah keneged schar. I was able to cheshbin based on my own pain. He said, I have to land this plane perfectly. Knowing the pain that I went through, losing my father in a tragic way, I was not going to be the one who couldn't find the inner strength and that concentration and that focus and that skill in order to save all those people on the plane. He says, that's how I was able to land the plane perfectly. And again, that's a person, again, making the calculation, setting a price based on their own experience. Right? So what we've learned tonight is that whether it's looking at the Esav, or whether it's looking at our Yetzirah, whether it's looking at Eliyahu and the fisherman, or Jeff Wild in Switzerland, or the Ishmaelim placing a price on Yosef at Tzaddik, a person has to be able to figure out, what's it worth to me? How can I draw on my own experience? How can I draw on other people's commitments in order to be mechazik myself? We look at the final source together. In the Or Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak of Radvil, and with this I conclude. He quotes a medrash, a very interesting medrash. The medrash says that because Esav cried, why can't I have a bracha? Medrash says, Bishvil dimoz shebacha Esav, va'amar barcheni gam ani avi. When Esav, after Yaakov got his brachos, and Esav cried bitter tears, it's not fair, I also want a bracha. Zochol lekol hatov hazeh. So much of our suffering in this final gullus, the gullus of Edom, which is the gullus of Esav, is because Esav cried bitter tears to get a bracha from his father. So the Rebbe of Shmelk of Nicholsburg asked, have we not cried also? Have the Jewish people not cried enough tears to counter the tears of Esav? And the Rebbe of Shmelka said, you know what the problem is? Our tears are not sincere enough. Now again, it's not so simple to say such a thing. It's not stam to be able to assess the value of the tears of the Jewish people. But the Rebbe of Shmelka of Nicholsburg says, shouldn't the tears of Esav be, so to speak, batel b'shishim in all of our tears? But in halacha, for something to be batal, it has to be what? He says, if it's min b'mino, it's eino batal. If it's a thing with amongst its own type, it's not so easily made batal. And unfortunately, you know what type of tears Esav was crying? Esav was crying, I also want the pleasures of Olam Hazeh. It's not fair, why should I suffer? And unfortunately, says the Rebbe of Shmelk of Nicholsburg, the Jewish people, we're not crying. We don't cry over what? We cry over our own pain, our own suffering, our own hardship. We're not crying enough over the fact that what? That Hashem doesn't have a Beis HaMikdash. That there's not, quote, Malchus in the world. We're not crying over the fact Right? That the Torah is not being treated the way it should be treated. We're crying too much over our own personal suffering and our own losses. And not to make light of that, God forbid. But unfortunately, until we're able to surpass Esav the way that Yaakov Avinu did with his purchase of Maaseh Machpelah, unfortunately, the tears of Esav are still keeping pace with us. So, Mirtz Hashem, we should try to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we value your mitzvot at least as much, if not much more, than the enemies of Klal Yisrael. Right? That we should be able to draw on our own physical experiences to channel ourselves to strive a little higher in our spiritual experiences. And then Amir Tzashem will be able to muster up those tears, so to speak. To be able to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu our priorities are in the right place, our values are in the right place. We know how to spend in the right way without feeling disappointed that Hashem is asking too much of us. And then Amir Tzashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be makabel all of those tears and bring the gula of Meher B'Yaminu. Have a beautiful Shabbos. Who would like to daven Maariv by a show of hands?